Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It's 9 o'clock and I am so excited because I am here today with a personal hero of mine and an absolute legend. And I do not use that term lightly. This is a legend of magic and one of the nicest and most creative men that you will ever meet, Mr. Wayne Dobson. How are you doing, Wayne?
I'm all right, Craig. How are you?
I'm so excited. You know what? I just said to you off camera, didn't I? I've done so many of these interviews now, and I've interviewed so many people. And this is the only time, I'll be honest with you, this is the only time that I'm actually nervous, because you've been a hero of mine for such a long time. And I'm like, oh my gosh, if I could go back in time and tell my young self from the 90s that I was interviewing Wayne Dobson, I think he'd just like, wouldn't believe me for a second. This is the cool, one of the coolest things that's ever happened in my career. So,
Good. Man,
thank you so much. And on channel. And obviously, if people don't know, we've got Mike Sullivan here as well, who is a part of D-Trix, and you guys between you, put so much magic out. And I want to talk about that in a bit.
Yeah.
But what I'd like to do, if it's okay with you, Wayne, just start at the very beginning and talk about kind of how you got into magic and what it was like at the very, very beginnings, because some people might not know that story. So it'd be good if we could go through that. That'd be great.
I was born just out of wedlock. I'm now 63. I should have been 65. But my dad got 2 years. And when I was 9, I had a magic set for Christmas, as we all do. And that's when it started for me. That's when I got my first interest.
And obviously, did you actually, I don't know the answer to this, did you ever have a proper job, Wayne, or did you like go straight from school into performing? No. It feels like you've been performing your whole life. Did you ever have a proper job?
I did have a proper job. I worked in a hosiery factory.
All right.
Making socks. I was a sample dyer, but I got the sack for being colorblind. Apparently, I was putting too much red in the browns and all sorts. It's true.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
So, yeah, I did have a proper job.
But and
I didn't like it.
No, definitely not. I completely agree with you there. Now,
I always wanted a fake job.
Absolutely. And you cut your teeth. I mean, back in the day when you got into magic, because these days, the kids that get into magic these days, it's all close-up magic. And I say on the channel sometimes, I say, back when I was a kid, nobody got into close-up magic. It was, the aspiration was to be a stage magician, wasn't it? That was...
Always. And I made my living. I went professional at 21 to the clubs in the northeast and died a lot. Well, there was very strong smells of embalm fluid.
Do you think it's harder for people these days that want to be a stage magician? Because when you turned professional, there were so many working men's clubs and there were so many places where you could go. You don't really see that opportunity around these days as much, do you?
I think it's more difficult now being a stage magician. Whereas now I see on TV a lot of the time, it seems all about the trick and not the performer.
Yeah.
And I think it's got, even the close-up magician, it's got to be about the performer. I've got to remember the performer. Somebody once said to me, are you a ventriloquist, comedian, or magician? I said, I don't care, as long as you remember my name.
Brilliant advice. Mm. Absolutely brilliant advice. Do you have any, I've said on this channel that when COVID's over and things go back to normal, there's probably going to be a more of a demand for stage magicians than there are going to be close-up, because just the term close-up, it's kind of like social distancing and close-up don't really work together. Mm. But a lot of close-up magicians are terrified about going on stage, because there's a big difference between walking up to two people and walking out on stage in front of hundreds of people.
Well, I think with close-up magic, you go to the people, whereas on stage, they come to you.
Yeah.
So that's the difference.
Do you have any advice for any magicians that want to be stage magicians? Any advice on how to manage the nerves? Because that's the thing that a lot of magicians really struggle with, that the thought of going out on stage and it makes them physically sick. Have you got any sort of...
I haven't really, because that's all I knew. Mm. So the nerves for me, I used to like them. If I didn't get nervous, that's when things would go wrong.
Mm. I suppose it means that you care. If you're nervous, it means that you care.
It does.
And you talked about having, you talked about when you go out on stage, it's not about the trick, it's about entertaining people.
Yeah.
Any tips on how to, because you are so entertaining. I mean, that's the thing that you get from a Wayne Dobson performance. It's not just watching a magic trick. It's the whole package. Have you got any advice on how to actually make it entertaining so you're not hiding behind that magic trick?
Make them like you as a person. If they like you, they will like whatever you do. And if you do good magic, it's a bonus.
That's great.
That's why I would say, get them to like you. It's like anything. If you like the packaging of a bar of chocolate, you can like the chocolate. If you like what they're wrapped up in. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally get that. Totally get that.
Yeah.
Now you, Mr. Dobson, have balls of steel.
Yeah.
Because we need to talk about your big break, or the moment where it kind of, you hit the big time, which I think, I don't know if you'd agree with me, but it's probably when you did the Royal Variety performance.
Yeah.
And you went out on stage in front of thousands of people on national television, and you did a bloody sponge ball trick. You did a trick with a sponge, something that every single, so can I just get my head around this? You've been given your big break. You know, you've been working in working men's clubs, you've been, working in front of really tough audiences. You get to a point where it's like, right, okay, we're going to give you a huge platform to show everyone what you're capable of.
Yeah.
And with all of the stuff that you can do, and as creative as you are, you do a sponge ball trick. Man, that takes balls.
Because I just picked what I knew. There were so many people go on the Royal Show and they try and create something especially for the occasion. But the ones that win are always the ones that do what they know. When you look at like George Carr and all them doing their act, they've done forever. I did something I'd done. I knew what I was doing inside out.
Yeah. Absolutely. And where did your iconic vent sequence come from? Is that something? How, because you were really the first person to do that. How did that come about?
Well, I saw an old vent many, many years ago. A guy called Dennis Spicer. And he did something where he squeezed the wrists of people and they mouthed what he was saying. And all I did was tug it. I get the idea in my subconscious. They did it without squeezing their wrists. Just like doing it in the clubs. Just with the high voice. And they got big laughs. Then I introduced the deep voice. And it just became synonymous for me, really. It became my meal ticket. Mm. Really took me all over the world. Took me everywhere. Got me my TV show, everything. I mean, and I used the vents all the time in my TV. And a lot of people say, once you've done something on TV, it's gone. It hasn't. That's what they know you for. Just do it more and more. And that's what I did. I kept doing it.
And obviously, you just mentioned it there, but after the Royal Variety Show, that's when you, shortly afterwards, you got the TV show, which was huge. I mean, it was absolutely huge. I remember tuning into that every single night and loving every single moment of it. Yeah. Was it difficult from a creative point of view? Was it difficult coming up with so much material? Because
no,
so much magic.
I find that when I was under pressure, I would create, but more so being under pressure, because you've got to. So I came up with stuff. Plus I had Pat Page 24/7, which was a great person to have at your side. Whenever you need an idea, I would think it through with him and we'd just come up with stuff.
And obviously on the show, that was the first time you started doing sort of grand illusions. Is that something that you enjoyed doing? Because you'd never touched illusions before, had you?
Not for a start, because I'm not a Captain Fantastic. And Russ Stevens was working with me and he said, why don't you get in the box and then let all the girls do all the showy stuff? And you just get in there, stay in the dark for 5 minutes, earn your money, come out, and get all the applause. I went, yeah, that sounds good. And it worked for me. I became the subject of the illusion, and I think that worked.
Oh, it did. Absolutely. Completely turned it on its head. And over the course of the TV show, is the one particular routine out of everything that you did on all the different seasons, is the one particular thing that you enjoyed the most, or your favourite routine?
I liked a lot of it. Most of it. Once I'd done something, I then moved on and that's what got me fresh.
I remember, I don't think it was part of the main run of your TV shows, but I remember a distant memory of you doing a close-up magic special.
Yeah.
Did you? Because I remember watching that, and that's what really sparked my interest in close-up magic. You were doing some incredibly awesome stuff. And at the time, there wasn't that much close-up magic being put on TV. How did that come about? Like, was that something that you suggested?
Somebody asked me if I would do it, And because I never really performed close up, only for friends, and I always felt close up should be an extension of what you do. It's a trick, and that's why I wanted it in the show to perform to these people. Like, rather than like go up to them in a crowd, I wanted to do it as a performance.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was amazing. It really was. I mean, it was. Did you do, as I say, it's a distant memory. It's definitely what got me interested in close-up magic. Did you do the sword going through the ring? I think you did, or something like that. Yeah. The
samurai sword.
I filmed that. Like, I recorded that on a VHS tape back in the day. And I remember almost wearing that tape out, rewinding it over and over again, just trying to figure out how you did that. I'm like, that's impossible. That can't be done. Yeah.
It was collected workshop, samurai sword.
It's absolutely amazing.
You've just bought one, haven't you?
Yeah.
Oh, it's such a good trick.
I'm going through this phase at the moment where I'm just taking stuff that Wayne did and we're trying to recreate it. One of the things collectors workshop put up that they've got some, so we put in an order for it. So that we can do it. And also, I mean, we've still got Blue Phantom. That was the one with the chips.
I remember that.
Wayne, I actually managed to track down the original that Wayne used, and I got it for him for his birthday. And that's sitting in his front room, in his bedroom.
Oh, that's brilliant. How awesome is that?
It's great, wasn't it, to see that again. Remember Tommy Wonder was on that show as well?
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Den from EastEnders.
I tried to get Ricky J.
Yeah, that's right.
But he was too expensive.
That would have been awesome. But you had some great
Tommy
guests.
Was cheaper. Yeah. Brilliant. He was fantastic on it.
Yeah.
Tommy is wonderful.
Yeah.
And obviously, the most popular guest on your TV show was the rabbit, right? I mean. Yeah. Where did the idea, was that your idea, Wayne, or
no? The producer was friends with the people in Spitting Image, and he said, "I'm gonna get you a rabbit made," and he got this rabbit made, got a puppeteer in, and that was it.
It was brilliant, though. Yeah. It added something totally different. So it was really good. It was really, really cool. Awesome. Yeah. So obviously, when the TV show finished, obviously, was it shortly after the TV show that you realized that you were ill, or was it during the TV show? Sorry?
I knew long before.
Oh, did
I knew when I was doing the John Longthorne series, I knew about the MS. Then we did the three series, all the time knowing I got MS. And then we were due to do a fourth series, and I collated ideas together. But I thought to myself at that point, I don't know if I can do this. And then Central TV, all the TV companies had their franchise come up and they were bought out by Carlton. And Carlton said, no more magic shows. And that was the reason. But it was a blessing in disguise. Because I don't think I could have done that.
Well, I'm amazed that you were able to go, you know, I mean, through three seasons, because it's ridiculously hard work filming a TV show. Like, it's 24/7, isn't it? And the fact that you were able...
I used to get in at 9 in the morning on a Monday and we work all week until the Saturday for 6 weeks. But I'd done a lot of pre-filming beforehand. Yeah, it was hard work, but good hard work. I used to live on Snickers and coffee and cigarettes all week.
There's worse to live on, to be honest. That's really funny. And when did you, so the TV series finished, it was a blessing in disguise. When did you kind of decide that you were going to take a step back from performing, and did you kind of have in your mind that you wanted to move into creating at that point?
I was still performing, but there were rumors going around about me being a drug addict and alcoholic, and I got AIDS and everything. The rumors began back to me, and it was hurting me.
Yeah.
So I decided to come out with the press. And I knew when I came out, the work would drop off. And it did. But then after a few years, Joe Pasquale said to me, "Wayne, it's a real shame that you're not working. You can do it sitting down." So he said, "Do you want to come on tour with me?" And I said, "I don't want to be a pain in the ass to you, but I'd love to try it." And ended up doing a 72 date, one night tour with him.
Wow. And how was that for you?
Yeah, I loved it. I think I wanted to prove to myself I could still do it. So I did. But then eventually it got to a point. I remember I was doing a convention, funny enough, in Denver in about 2005 or something. And at the end of the convention, I did a show for the public. It was about 1,500 seat theatre, and it was full of magicians and public. And I worked in the wheelchair, and it was with me, Dave Williamson, Charlie Fry, a few others, and I had a fantastic show. Right, a really brilliant show. And I came off that night, I looked in the mirror and I went, "That's it, I'm done." I thought, no more public shows. Still magicians, but no more public. I thought, I want people to remember me being good. And luckily, all my YouTube footage is always when I was at my prime, really. So.
And
that was it. Yeah.
And you went out on your own terms.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah, I did.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So
I don't want to go out on being not good anymore.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. I can understand that. When did you decide to then move into creating, Wayne? I mean, was there a period of time where you were kind of unsure about what to do? Because I know you're a born performer, and you make that decision to stop performing. Yes. It's almost like ripping your own arm off or something. You know, it's...
Yeah. I didn't... consciously decide to create. I think it was necessity, really. And I started creating. I thought of people like my stuff. And I just carried on.
Considering, but I mean, it's something that you'd never done earlier on in your career, because obviously you were so busy performing and being on TV and going all over the place. Considering you'd never done it and you just said you did it kind of more out of necessity.
Yeah.
You're bloody good at it. I mean, the tricks that you've brought out are, I've never seen a bad Wayne Dobson trick, ever.
Yeah.
And you know that I've got a reputation of kind of saying what I think and being outspoken. And I, you know, I'd be completely honest with you as well, Wayne. Yeah. If I saw a trick that I didn't like, I'd tell you. Sure. I've never seen a bad Wayne Dobson trick. They're always so clever and so well thought out. And it's amazing. Right.
I always have a performer's mentality. So that's always in the back of my mind when I create. And when I create now, even I think, now if I was doing this on TV, this is the way I would do it.
Mm. But your effects are also so commercial. You see, especially these days, Wayne, you see so many tricks come out that are just complete pipe dreams, that are never designed to be worked by a real person. And they're just rubbish. And you can just tell that somebody's bought them out for one reason, and one reason only, which is to just stick some money in the pocket. But you, your standards with your routines, it's not just that they're good and they're clever, but they're designed to be worked. I imagine that you're really passionate about wanting people not just to buy the tricks, but actually use them for real people.
Yeah, I want them to work on. And that's what I like. I try and simplify everything as much as I can so you can concentrate on the performance.
Yeah, that's really, really good. So here's a question. Do you have creating magic is a magician's holy dream, you know, holy grail. They every magician wants to be a creator. I think it's because we put the creators of magic up on pedestals in this industry. Mm. And everybody wants to be a creator of magic. As somebody who has successfully created more magic than I've probably forgotten at this point, have you got any advice on how to create a magic trick that's good?
To be honest, Craig, I look at a plot and I think, how would I do that? Or I see something and I go, how would I do that? And it ends up being something totally different. And I think when I've done it, I often think, where was my starting point? I can't remember.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. And I said to you off camera, my magician fooler, and I rave about this on the channel all the time, is that four ace trick that you published in the Look No Hands book, which is, in my opinion, still the best booklet of magic that I've ever seen. And I looked at a lot of magic. Is that still available from Dietrich's, the Look No Hands booklet?
It's only available now as a download.
Yeah.
But they can still download it. How did you come up? Like for people that don't know this trick that I'm talking about, that I completely fooled David Penn with, it's four ace assembly, but you never touch the playing cards.
No.
The spectator, think about that. There's like 16 cards, and they end up doing a four ace assembly, and you don't have to touch anything. No. I've never seen anything so clever, and you know, it's, if people want to see it, they can go back on the Wizard Product Review and see them doing it. Like, how did you what was your starting point with that trick, Wayne?
Again, I have no idea.
I think you wanted to call it McDobson's Aces rather than McDonald's Aces. Right. There's his starting point. Change the name.
So clever, though.
It's a very clever trick.
It's brilliant. When did you form Dietrich's? Was that when you started creating, or did you get to a point where
I mean, D-Track with my number plate on my car. That's what people used to say to me, oh, it's good that you've got a number plate to match your company. I went, no, it was the other way around. I had the number plate first.
That's awesome. Here's a question. Obviously, you're very close friends with Russ Stevens. And Russ is a great guy. I've interviewed him on this channel as well.
Yeah.
And obviously, Russ, through his production company, RSVP, published some wonderful DVDs.
Yeah.
Back at your classic footage and re-teaching them, recreating them. And it was amazing. It was such a wonderful DVD project.
Yeah.
Was that something that you approached Russ about, or was it something that Russ wanted to do with you? How did that come about?
Both, really. I think that was when Russ first started as well, and he approached me, and I talked to him, and we did it between us.
They're amazing. If people haven't seen them, are they available in D-Tricks as well? Can you still get those?
Download
on.
Not from us, from RSVP Magic.
RSVP. So you can.
You can still get the Life and Magic volumes, 1, 2, and 3, and Look in the Hands, the DVD as well.
Okay. So I want to talk about Mike as well, because recently you and Mike have obviously been linked. We, you know, when we see Wayne, we see he's the Robin to your Batman, or the Lewis Lane to your Superman, something like that. I don't know.
He is my love child.
where did how did you meet? Like, how did this relationship come together? You know.
It was a strange. We have a mutual friend, and Wayne was asking who could Wayne have as a demonstrator. You'd been using people like Paul DeBeck at the time, and some other people as well. But he needed someone who he could rely on, and I think it was Barry from International Magic, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I used to go to International Magic on a regular occurrence, sit and eat jacket cakes, drink tea, coffee, stuff like that, and look at the latest magic effects that they'd had in. And Barry said to me one day, he said, oh, Wayne's looking for a demonstrator. Do you think you could do it? And I went, well, at the time, most of my magic effects that I was using on a regular basis as a close-up magician was Wayne Dobson effects, because I saw the potential in the performer being bigger than the trick.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, that allowed me to get and earn quite a lot of money at the time by getting repeat bookings and things like that. So I was a big Wayne Dobson fan anyway, proper fanboy. So I would see Wayne at conventions and you know, buy his latest effect and things like that. Anyway, back to this, and I thought, what a wonderful opportunity I have of being able to work with, you know, one of my idols, you know. And I said to Barry, yeah, you know, set it up, pal. Do what you need to do. And I get a phone call one day, and it's Wayne on the phone. And I'm like, hello, you know, it's Wayne Dobson, for crying out loud. He said, could you help me with the Magic Circle? No, it wasn't the Magic Circle today. It was the International Magic Convention, Ronsdale. And I said, yeah, brilliant. When is it? And he said, oh, it's in 2 weeks' time, but you'll need to come to see me. Anyway, my heart sank. I thought, oh, no, because I'd already committed to a project with Marvin Burglass, and we were doing the Marvin's Magic School at the O2 at the time. And I said to Wayne, I'm really sorry, I can't do this international magic. And he said, oh, you know, worst thing that you could ever say to someone like me is, no worries, I'll get someone else. I put the phone down. I said to my wife at the time, I said, I've just given up the biggest opportunity. Anyway, a year went by, saw Wayne at conventions, you know, and thought I'd blown it. But the next year, he rings me again. He says, Mike, are you free now? I want you to help me with the Magic Circle Dealers Day. And I was like, yes, you know, jumping for joy. I came down to the house. We sat for ages, didn't we? It was ages. I thought it'd be like half an hour meeting. Wayne had handed me a bag of magic that I hadn't got, asked me to go and practice it. But we spent what seemed ages. I didn't get home until, I think, 2 in the morning. I had this bag of magic, and we just sat and talked magic all day. And it was just, you know, we clicked. Something happened. We clicked. It was more than just being a demonstrator. We were like bantering and playing with the magic. And anyway, I took this magic that I hadn't had home, over the moon, practiced, and met Wayne.
About 10 effects.
About 10 effects. Yeah. So I was furiously going for it. I was working on it. I had literally about 10 days before the Magic Circle Dealers Day. So I spent 24 hours on each trick, because like Wayne said at the beginning, you've got to work these tricks. You've got to go through them. Now, unfortunately, I'm not in a position where, you know, that I was showing my wife, I was showing my children, they were getting the ump, I was showing my mum, my sister, my brother. Anybody that sat down got a magic trick, pretty much. So the day came, it was on the Saturday, I ran down to the hotel where they had it, running to the dealer's hall, and no one was there.
Because you were late.
I was late. I got in a little bit late because of the traffic, the tube. Wayne wasn't there. I just went, where's Wayne? And I was told he was at the bar. And I went, okay, fine, fair enough. So I started setting up my little props, getting ready to go. And I was just sitting there, and people started coming over, and they're going, can you show us Lucky Card? And I'm like, Lucky Card? He's not told me anything about Lucky Card. They went, what? He's been doing it all morning. He's been fooling everybody. And I had the likes of Richard Pinner, Andy Nyman. There's all these people coming up going to me, show Lucky Card. And I've no idea. Anyway, Wayne saunters back. And Wayne, you know, you've given me all this magic, 10 tricks. I've learned them. I've spent time, effort to learn these tricks. And all I keep getting asked is to show Lucky Card. And he just started laughing, giggling in his chair. And I went, what are you laughing at? And he went, I forgot. And I was like, you're kidding me. The best trick in the convention, you know, in the dealer's hall. And you forgot. And that was the beginning of a beautiful relationship.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the sort of things he does. He completely forgot about the trick. Obviously gets there, shows other people, and then expects me to know it. And not a clue. But now I do. And it's probably your signature effect, isn't it? As a close-up trick. Hands off. I mean, it's... you think that the... Ace Assembly is good. Lucky Card blows people. Can I tell you a story about Lucky Card?
Absolutely, I'd love to.
You'll love
it. I don't think I know. I know most of Wayne's material, but I don't think
Lucky
I know.
Card's in Look No Hands. It's the card trick that cannot be... I don't think this would be for the interview, but it's a card trick that cannot be explained.
Okay.
So I'll tell you the story. You'll get the gist. So we're in Blackpool, and I'm performing Lucky Card to people that want to buy it. At that point, we had it on DVD, didn't we? We had the definitive guide to Lucky Card. And these two kids just walked up to the stand, and they got a deck of cards in their hands, and they're doing all this, you know, Sybil and whatever they're doing, and chewing gum, looking around bored, and they walked past and they walked up to me because it was we was quite quiet at the time. I think there was a big lecture on, and I went, so I tripped them like that. I went, okay, here's my lucky card, and I just took a card and I placed it on the table, and I went, that's my lucky card. We're going to find your lucky card the same way as I found mine. Your cards that you got in your hand, can you shuffle them? And he shuffled them. I said, now can you just spread them out to see that they're all mixed? And he went, yep. And I went, close them up. And I went, spell lucky card. One card, one letter. He spelled out lucky card. I said, now that's your lucky card. It's the same way I found my lucky card. Turn it over. Turns it over. It's the four clubs. I said, there's my lucky card. Turn it over. Turns it over. It's the four clubs. He looked at me and he went, so give me debt, mate. I went, they're your cards. And that was the end of it. They just sort of like, their faces dropped. And they just handed me over money. It was just unbelievable. They forgot the cards they were using were there. And because it was in look no hands, I didn't touch the pack.
That's amazing.
And it was, yeah, it just sort of like... And every time we show someone that hasn't seen the trick, they it blows their mind. Blows their mind.
And Iron was the best.
Andy Nyman was the best. I thought he was going to hit me. I really. There's another two stories. I don't know if you're going to use them, but there's another two stories. So Andy Nyman, this is an international. He comes up and he says, "Show me lucky card." And I showed him it. It's the same card we use all the time because it's our favorite card. And I better not say that because then you can't use it. So Andy Nyman comes up to the stand at International and he says, show me this lucky card that I've been hearing about. Anyway, so we did lucky card. He's taken the deck, he's shuffled it. My card is on the table. I've not touched it. I've not touched the deck he's using. He spells out lucky card, turns the cards over, they match. Now, that's the trick, but I thought he was going to kill me. He looked at me as if he was going to just go. I'm sure he wasn't, because I'm really good friends with Andy now, but it looked like, and I remember him, and he went, where is that? And I went, oh, it's in Wayne Dobson and Friends, because that was at the time, wasn't it? And he goes, I need to buy that. And I said, you've already got it because you're a contributor and you were sent a copy. Why didn't I see that? And I turned around to Wayne and I went, I think I've offended him. And he went, no, you fooled him. it was really good.
Henry Evans.
Oh, Henry Evans was the best. So Henry Evans is at Blackpool. And he's just brought out Four Doors. Is it called Four Doors? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Four Doors, which is a four DVD project on the car trick that Carol B explained. So I said, oh, Henry, I'll show you something. This is Wayne's lucky card. We did the effects. We did the routine. And he's like, I've got no idea. And I went, you've just brought out a four DVD set on how it's done. And he was like... That was the best. And he gave me a copy of the DVD. He said, you fooled me, there's a copy of the DVD. And it was brilliant. It was that gave us some mileage, that trick. Yeah. It's given us mileage. And the beauty of the trick is, and again, it goes down to Wayne's thinking of this process of being the performer, is that it is hands off. I keep getting told off for saying hands because I'm a copy. It is hands off, and it's impromptu, and it can be used with any deck of cards. And that deck of cards doesn't necessarily have to be a full deck. You know? So it ticks all the boxes. So it's a great trick. It's a fantastic trick.
Richard Young.
Richard Young. Yeah, there's a. So Richard Young done the Magician's podcast. He came round to do the interview, and Wayne says, do you want to see Lucky Card? And he went, yeah, sure, okay. Because he'd never heard of it. And it just blew him away. He was standing there for minutes going, what? How? How? And before we sort of like told him how it was done. And he said, I have never... He never promoted a trick on his podcast. Has he? That is the only trick that he ever promoted.
Wow.
He said, and then he started showing it to people around the world because he was touring, wasn't he, with his illusion.
Young and Strange, yeah.
Yeah. And sending us clips of these people, these top magicians going, what? How'd you do that? And it was, it's on YouTube somewhere, isn't it? But it's one of my go-to effects. Magician Faller, Layperson Faller. If you haven't seen it, just check it out.
Well, here's a question for you both. Yeah. If somebody's never checked out any of Wayne's material outside of Lucky Card, if somebody's watching this and they think, you know, because we do get a lot of new people on this channel that are like really new into magic, and they watch this and they're like, okay, this sounds like my sort of magic, and they go onto the Dietrix website, which I'm going to be putting the URL for down at the bottom of the screen, by the way, now, guys.
Yeah, because everybody puts D-T-R-I-C-K, but it's D-T-R-I-K.
Absolutely, no sir. So, and the link will be in the description anyway, but if somebody's watching this and they go through to the Dietrix website, outside of Lucky Card, are there any tricks that either you, Wayne, or you, Mike, would recommend people buy that would give them a good kind of understanding of the type of magic that Wayne does?
So, going back to what we were saying about Wayne's way of thinking magic, okay? Now, what you would expect, and obviously this may or may not go in the edits, entirely up to you, Greg, but Wayne should be at the top as one of the top inventors of magic, yeah? The problem that you've got is you've got the people like, what's his name, Lawrence?
Nicholas
Lawrence, people like that. And they're doing this gimmicky sort of like in your face Zoom stuff. And that is the stuff that people are doing. We're living in a climate at the moment where the sort of magic that Wayne's brought out in the past is not suited for that. Okay, we have tweaked some of it, and we are going to put that on the ad copy of some of the things that we're doing, and then that would be reflected in the videos, mm-hmm. that are downloads. And I've always said this to everybody. People come and people see the trailers of Wayne's magic, and they might think, oh, yeah, that's a good trick. And they always do. When they come to a convention and see it performed live, they walk away with it in their pocket. And that is my point. My point is, you've got to, Wayne has said that he tries to make it as simple as possible. Yeah. Simplicity is not the same as easy. Yeah. And I've learned that while working with Wayne, and certainly people that buy his magic have found that out. For instance, I'll give you an instance. We have a trick called Metamorphosis XL, which is about a two coin transfer based on the Metamorphosis plot. So someone went in the trunk and then the curtain's lifted, and now that person's on top of the trunk and the person on top is now in the trunk. Well, Wayne did this in a spectator's hand with two coins. The effect is phenomenal. And if you perform it correctly, the reactions you get is unbelievable. Was it a great seller? No, it wasn't a great seller, because people look at it, and I wouldn't put it in terms of wow, you know, the wow gimmick. It was a good seller for us. We sold loads of them. But in the whole great scheme of things with the world, no, it wasn't a great seller. But when then you have people like the likes of Ben L and Colin Cloud, who have used the effect and come back to us and say, what a fantastic trick it is. Because what we see now is that we see magicians going online and looking at a trailer and going, I can be that person in that trailer. Yeah. Mm. And that's why they buy the trick.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Whereas Wayne says, don't look at the person in the trailer, look at the trick, and see if it suits you. Yeah? Because although we say it's all about the performer, when the trailer is shown, you will notice it's all about the trick. Because it's a trailer. Whereas all the other trailers, it's all about the bloke going, oh, look at me, I'm doing this, and screaming girls and all the things like that. Things that Wayne pointed out to me that made it very specific when we were talking about how Dietrich markets their magic. Number one, I don't want you in a pub performing to a load of screaming people. I don't want you on the street performing to a load of strangers. I want you in a studio or in an environment where it's quiet and you can talk about the product and how it works and things like that. So going back to your original question, what magic? All of it. Because these keys that were put in about where to perform, how to perform, why to perform, why do we do that instead of doing this? All this information that was given to me, and what you've got to imagine, this guy's in a wheelchair, can't move from the neck down. Yeah? So everything that he comes up with is in there.
Yeah.
That's why I want to open it sometimes and find out. And that's the real magic as far as I'm concerned. I mean, that is magic in itself. He's here. Yeah? He comes up with the trick. He comes up with the plot. He comes up with the props. He comes up with handling. He then relays it to me. I then have to go and do the R&D, either that through Alan Wong or not, depending on how we're going to produce the trick. And then film the videos, film the trailer, film the download that they get and stuff like that. And that has to be all put together and, you know, worked out. And it all comes from this guy's head.
And that's the thing that I want people to understand that are watching this. Wayne, your story is so inspirational. It's so inspirational because nobody would blame you when you decided to retire from performing and you went to your own terms. Nobody would blame you if you decided to sit at home on your own and feel sorry for yourself. Nobody would blame you.
No.
But what you did is you completely reinvented yourself. You created an entire new company. It's incredible. And I think that, like I said, there are magicians that are struggling right now because of what's happened in COVID-19. And I think you need to look at what Wayne's gone through and what he's managed to achieve and use that as a source of inspiration and understand that anything is possible if you believe and you put your mind to it.
Well, Wayne's been in lockdown for 30 years.
Exactly.
There's been no change. There's been no change. Well,
people have been moaning and bitching about the last year.
Absolutely.
But look, it's incredible what you've done. You know, it's absolutely, the only word I can use to describe it, Wayne, is it's inspirational. It really is.
Well, when I wake up in the morning, I have two choices. I can either be miserable or get on with it. And I choose to get on with it. That's all.
My God, I love you. I really, really do.
I love you too.
Do you want to go back to your original question about where we should look? Because I think I'll tangent off there quite away. What? I mean, I'm just going to have a conflict with Wayne now. What trick do you think would epitomize everything at the moment?
A lot of them.
See, this is what I'm saying. Just go to the website. And I mean, if I was to choose one right now, apart from lucky cards, you said, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if I was to choose one right now, apart from lucky cards, does it have to be available?
Well, people want to buy it if they're watching it. So yeah, probably.
Okay, because 360 was one of my favorites, which was the clear, impossible cartoon.
Yeah, that is great. That is.
If I was to choose one, that would be the key.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Now, two things this covers. Right. Well, three things this covers, actually.
I forgot about the key. Oh, so good.
The first thing it covers is you can do it on Zoom. Right? So let's get rid of that. that elephant, because it can be done on Zoom, but it was designed to be done in close-up situations. The second thing is that it's an effect based on an old effect and improved exponentially.
I remember Paul Zenon doing the old version,
and
linking it onto a girl's earrings on a TV special. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Wayne did Unikey with Lisa Goddard on his TV show. And the key, I don't know if you're going to put a link up or something, allows you to now use things like a wedding band. So it just straight over. But it's the presentation. If you look at Wayne's presentation, it's complete theatre from beginning to end. The key itself is, the key is just a catalyst.
It doesn't matter.
No, it's the presentation and the fact that you pull that napkin away and the spectator's holding the key with the ring on it in their hand. I mean, that's pure theatre. And to elevate you as a performer, it does it for you. It does what it says on the tin.
And the other thing with the key is one of my pet hates with magicians is when they're caught out and about and someone says, show me a trick, and they go, well, I've got nothing on me. And it's kind of like, well, how can you call yourself a magician and say you've got nothing on you? If you get the key, you can just pop it on your key ring, you're out in a restaurant.
Do this.
Anytime, anywhere you can do it.
I mean, the key is up there with Lucky Card. It's something that I always carry around. And I incorporated it with Ring Flight as well. So it just goes on and on and on. You get 15 minutes out of the whole thing easily. And it is lots of magic moments.
Absolutely.
So brilliant. The key would be my...
key is class. I totally agree with you. Mm. Can I ask you, Wayne, one of the things that your name has become synonymous with recently in the last few years is the Wayne Dobson's and Friends show at Blackpool.
Yeah.
I mean, for many people, that's the highlight of the convention. How did that come about? I mean, because you basically take over the whole convention now. Everybody, that dealer hall empties. Oh, it's Wayne Dobson and Friends. Let's just that everyone's going to be in there. You know, it's the highlight of the convention.
Yeah.
How did all that come about?
I was doing a show for Bill Lever one year, and he said, do Wayne Dobson and Friends. So I did, and we kept it going for 10 years. I think I've had enough of it now. I want to do it in a little bit different way. I feel like it's run its course.
What would your plan be with it moving forward?
It'd probably be very similar, but just have a few different things. You know, I kept it basically the same for 10 years, but I just feel that it ran its course.
Fair enough. Well,
like fashion, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's been phenomenally popular every single year it's been the highlight.
Yeah.
Obviously, the last Blackpool that went on in 2020, we had Project Orville.
Yeah.
Which is just the most amazing story I've ever heard. I mean, I was there. And
you saw it. Yeah.
I was blown away, Wayne. Yeah. I was absolutely blown away.
Yeah.
Could you share about how that all came about and what it was like doing that?
I think Mike originally said something.
Yeah, well, years back, I had this idea of Wayne doing an illusion. We didn't know what it was. And it was just thought about for minutes and then forgotten about. I'm not sure if I spoke to Michael Fitch about it. May well have done. But Michael then came up with this idea of getting Wayne in a wheelchair and whacking him into the stratosphere.
And then the twins.
And then he contacted the twins, who are very big in the panto and theatre industry with their amazing flying things. I mean, from a TARDIS to a dragon to, you know, a car. And now they're involved in this Back to the Future production in London. And they took it with both hands, didn't they? They really got their teeth into it. And for 18 months leading up to Blackpool, Orville was ready to take flight.
Yeah.
There's not much more information I'm allowed to give you, I'm afraid, Craig.
That's fine.
What else?
No. I mean, that was it. I mean, there was their ups and downs. We did at times think it weren't going to happen. But, I mean, the whole team, everybody, involved.
There was about 20 of us.
There was in the end. Richard Cadell got involved. Lovely guy. I'm just trying to think. Bob Gill, he helped with scripting.
There was about 10.
Sean Alexander, he helped with the visuals,
sound,
the audio, which was great for the
and those
montage at the beginning.
About 10 crew.
Loads of, oh, what, I think it's more than that.
To work the chair.
Yeah, there was loads of crew to work the whole illusion and stuff. And, it, I mean...
Were you saying the theatre, Craig?
Yeah, what I loved about it, Wayne, is you just didn't go up on the stage like your average illusion. You were light bulb thing, man. You were going out into the audience. It was incredible.
Shall I tell him?
Chills.
He was scared shitless.
I'm surprised I would be.
So when you see something, when you look up at something, it doesn't look too far away, does it? It's like, oh yeah, that ceiling is whatever. But when you actually go up and look down, it's a whole different dimension. And I remember in one of the rehearsals, and they said, right, you're now going to go out into the audience. I mean, that was the key. I mean, there are some wonderful pictures of Wayne just whooshing out in front, and people with their mouths open. We're talking like seasoned magicians with their mouths open, looking up and seeing Wayne. And I remember they pushed, and he was like, oh my God. Because it only looked about 30 foot up in the air, but to Wayne it was like 80 foot in the air. And they weren't slow coming forward. Were they? You whooshed out like this. Yeah. It was.
I don't think I would have done that way. Braver man than me, that was.
And then, funny you should say that, because it came back down, it landed, you know, all the music cues were put together, and he went, I want to do it again. So we did it again. I think we did it two or three times, didn't we? And you loved it by the end of it, didn't you? So it was a fantastic experience. And if it weren't for the fact that everybody involved worked so hard and tirelessly on it, it wouldn't have happened.
This goes to show how loved you are, how much respect that people have for you.
Yeah.
That this came from an idea into reality. It just shows how much that you mean, not only friends and also to the entire magic community, you know.
It's brilliant. I mean,
but watch this space.
Yeah.
Watch this space. We told it. You're the first. You're an exclusive.
I got an idea.
We got an idea.
There's an idea for something else.
That Wayne's been banding about, and we're going to see if we can make it work. So when Blackpool gets back to normal,
you know what? I've got a friend who's a motivational speaker. His name's Brad Burton, and he always turns round and he says, whatever the situation you're in, you have to ask yourself, what does this make possible? You know, with COVID or whatever it may be, what does this make possible? Well, you embody that, Wayne. You know, okay, so, you know, you've got MS. Like I say, again, it's so inspirational because... what does this make possible? What it, you're not stopping. I mean,
no.
I mean, how old, if you don't mind me asking, Wayne, how old are you now? 63. A normal, a 63-year-old that doesn't have MS wouldn't be doing what you're doing in theatres, let alone, I mean, it's just, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. It really is.
It keeps me going.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what keeps me going.
Well, let me ask you a question. Obviously, you gave a little tease that you've got something else planned, which is great.
Yeah.
Outside of that, is there anything left on your magical bucket list that you haven't achieved? And the reason I'm asking you this is because your legacy, my friend, is set. If you decided to just shut Dietrich's and never perform again and just become a recluse and never have anything to do with magic again,
people
would talk about you forever because you've made such an impact in this community,
not just
with the performances that you've done in the past, but with the creations that you've brought out, with everything that you've continued to do over your very long career. You and you know what? Any magician would be lucky to even have 5% of what you've achieved in your career. You know, if you said, well, you know, you get to go on TV, do all these series, do this, do that, do the other, run a successful company creating magic, people would be like, oh my gosh, that's my wet dream. And you've done it and then some. Like, is there anything left that you want to achieve? What are your plans in the future?
I always think no, but there's always something more I want to do. I don't know what.
Yeah.
We talk every day on Skype.
Yeah.
Very rarely do I come and see him. Luckily, since New Year, he's now part of my bubble, so I'm able to come down and sit with him. Plus, I've had the jab now, so I'm all...
Perfect.
Because I'm that old. he Skypes me every day. And I can count on one hand how many days there's been where he'll go, I've got nothing to say. You know?
Yeah.
Because there's always, the worst, you say to him about what would you do? The thing is he's constantly creating on a regular basis. I mean, today, a new trick, wasn't it?
Mm.
Today, a new trick. It's going in the book. Oh,
it's all right.
We can talk about it.
You can't leave that carrot dangling there, guys. Not elaborate.
All right, we'll talk about that in a minute. Yeah. Then. So he's constantly changing. And the thing is, right, he says to me, oh, just get it out because we need to get this. You know, I'm coming up with these ideas and they're working and we need to get them out. The problem is at the moment we're faced with a lot of constraints. The first one being COVID. I mean, there's no point in releasing a trick that requires interaction between two people. People just don't buy them at the moment.
Yeah.
So I'm holding on to them. He's getting frustrated because he wants them out. And I'm holding on to them because there's no market at the moment for them. So hence the reason why we're trying to tweak the content we have. Into Zoom shows, which we're doing quite successfully, and then obviously coming out with things like the Princess Card Trick as well, which is, you know, is purely for Zoom. Can it be done close up? Yeah, I think it can. You can get away with it close up in the real world, but it is more geared towards Zoom. So you say, I don't know, he'll say there's nothing I want to do, and then he'll come back to tomorrow or within 15 minutes and say, oh, I need to do this, and we want to go there. You want to travel the world more, don't you?
Why bother now?
I mean, he loves America.
Well, I mean, we've bumped into each other several times in America, haven't we, Wayne?
Yeah,
well, the first time me and Wayne hung out in America, if you remember, was
Kentucky.
Kentucky at the IBM SAM convention. Yeah. That was a good convention, that was. Yeah. And I just, I remember sitting at the bar with you for a few hours, having a few drinks. And I think that was the first time I ever showed you coin.
If I remember right, I think you bought a Metamorphosis with a Morgan dollar.
I did, and I've still got it right over there. Yeah, I've bought pretty much everything you've ever bought out, Wayne.
You've got Metamorphis XL then.
Yeah. With the real
ones.
I've got the deluxe version.
Yeah, see, we had to bring it out with a replica. Otherwise, it would have been far too expensive. But I know Craig and his coins. We go back many years.
I'm
doing a book.
Yes, the book.
So tell me about the book. This is exciting news.
It'll be two, maybe three volumes in the slip case. When I was down to do a full series, I wrote a lot of material and I did the series and the material got lost. But a couple of years ago, it surfaced again. And throughout my second marriage, which has gone now, it was quite an abusive marriage, should I say. So any ideas I had that were really top-notch, I kept under wraps. I didn't want anybody benefit from them, but they're coming out now. I'm going to put them in this book. We're going to call the book Legacy.
Legacy. Love it.
Yeah.
And is it going to be stories as well and advice?
My old biography in there. Illusions. I created close all a lot of new stuff.
Yeah. And this is the first time you've talked about this.
Sorry?
This is the first time you've talked about this. This is very
Yeah. Well, publicly.
Yeah.
Do we have a time frame, Wayne? I mean, obviously you never know with stuff like this.
End of the year probably.
And he's gonna bring them out all in one go, or is it gonna be like
in one go, three volumes. In this case.
Yeah, so I've just noticed the back of the books on your shelf at the back, Craig. So eat your heart out, Jay Sankey.
I'll tell you what I've got here, Wayne. You'll appreciate this. This is the private collection. What I have here.
The private collection.
Yeah, well, the bottom five shelves of this is every single episode, every single Abracadabra from the very first one to the very last one from the 1940s. Beautiful condition.
Great.
Abracadabra. And lots of cards there, marking stuff. I come down here in the evening and I just read old. Yeah. Hilarious, because you read the letters to the editor and it's like the forums of today. Everyone's just...
You remember Goodland?
Yes.
He had MS.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, he was in a wheelchair with MS. And he lived to a ripe old age, but didn't die of MS.
Well,
anybody's died of MS,
haven't they? I don't know.
It's just everything else that goes with it.
Well, I tell you something, Wayne. You can put my name down as the first person to buy one of those book sets in a heartbeat.
All right.
We will do.
Yeah.
So glad that you found time to do this, because I mean what I say. You're an inspiration. I love you to bits. And obviously, you know, a few years ago when I was on the Wizard Product Review, a lot of people were saying stuff about the whole you and me and Dave and Jeff McBride situation, and it really hurt, because a lot of people speak to me directly, and the reason it hurt is because I have always, from the very first time I ever saw you on TV, I have always respected the hell out of your bits, as you know, and I'm so glad that you've found the time to come on the chat.
That was a situation that got out of hand through nobody's fault.
Well, I think I have to take a certain amount of blame for that, mate. Let's be honest. I was a lot younger. Yeah, I was a lot younger. I was a lot more outspoken, believe it or not. Nice. And, I used to kick
controversy. Over. Controversy.
Yeah, I used to court controversy. I don't anymore. I don't, not as much. Put it that way. But no.
I'm saying to you, didn't I? I don't want to have enemies.
Yeah.
Tell Craig.
Yeah. So it was round about when Daniels died, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And Wayne said, you know, I don't want to drop off this mortal coil and have enemies, people hating me. So he went, you know, I helped him go out of his way. He went out of his way to find these people, including David and yourself, we remember. And just sort of like, you know, break a peace. And it was a good thing. I think it cleared a lot of people's, cleansed a lot of people. There's too much of this in the magic industry. There's far, far too much hatred and hurt over things that, you know, as someone who's come from industry in the retail sector and also the merchant banking sector, where you want to see hatred, you know, go to merchant banking. That's where the hatred is. But they're all working for the same company. I mean, us guys, we don't work for the same companies, but they seem to hate one another, and I don't understand it. I really don't. I like everybody.
Well, I saw a very wise man on TV many, many years ago who stood on a stage and he said, it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice.
And tonight you've been?
Yeah. That was me, yeah.
That was him. Yeah, that says it all. That says it all.
Yeah.
And that sums up who you are, though, Wayne. It's so true. You know, it's so true. Anyone who's got a bad word to say about you.
Yeah.
Quite a few.
That's
maybe I just go in the wrong circles or something, but I don't know. But
Wayne speaks his mind. And it's usually right, though. That's the thing. I mean, people don't like the truth, do they?
Well, you know, I speak my mind as well. I respect people that do that. I think that in the magic industry, I think there's too much kind of almost lying to each other. Like, how many times have you been in a magic club?
Yeah.
Bumbled their way through a car.
Mate,
how many gigs have you had this week?
A lot of them forget what we're doing.
Yeah. Card tricks.
What are you doing? Card tricks.
Yeah.
But when I was younger, really young, there wasn't that many magicians. There's thousands of them now.
Yeah.
Thousands.
Yeah.
It changes the way that you think about the way that you deal with the reality of it, because, like, you know, from our point of view as dealers, we're in a better position now than we were in 10 years ago, because there are thousands of magicians. So
it goes
thousands of customers.
It goes back to what I said, was people can go into a music shop, buy a book of music, and they don't call themselves a singer. They can buy a book on comedy, and they don't call themselves a comedian, but they go to a magic shop, buy a trick, and they call themselves a magician.
Yeah.
And
They're not.
They're not. And as I said to you, I think that a big part of it is magicians need to be more honest with each other. And what I mean by that is, if you see a magician, you know, that's performing a trick and it's not very good, tell them. If your magic buddy comes up to you and says, what do you think of this? If it's bad, say it's bad, but we don't do that. We go, oh yeah, that's really good. And then they go and perform it to real people.
Yeah.
Hate it. And now they hate magic because they've seen a trick that was rubbish and that could have been nipped in the bud if we were honest with each other and we started being more critical of his performances. But unfortunately, that doesn't happen. And
there's not much you can do about it, I'm afraid.
It's that old joke, isn't it? Or that old story. Somebody, you know, a guy got into magic and found out where his local magic society was, and he said to his wife, I'm going to magic club. So he went to magic club on the first night, and he came back, and his wife said, how was it? Oh, it was great. I learned how to turn two cards over as one, and had a great time. So then the following week, he said to his wife, I'm going to magic club. And he came back, and his wife said, how did it go? Oh, brilliant. I learned how to hold a coin secretly in my hand. It's called palming. Mm. It was a great time. And then the next week he came back, and his wife said, what did you learn from magic club this week? And he said, nothing. I had a gig. Couldn't go.
Mm.
And it's that true. People rush into going out and being a professional, and it's because it's so easy these days to print up a business card, call yourself a professional magician. Like back in your day, Wayne, you couldn't do that. You know, you die in your art. You know, you go into a club, you'd just be eaten alive.
Right.
I mean, I didn't take my first professional gig for 10 years. I was a magician for 10 years before I even contemplated. I was too scared.
I went on the road when I was 21.
Yeah.
I worked the clubs in the Northeast until I was 28.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. It's like people are not scared anymore. I mean, I'm scared of taking somebody's money and thinking, am I good enough to take the money?
Yeah. And it's that flight time that makes a good magician. You're talking about being on the road for 7 years doing clubs. It's that 7 year period on the road that
every night.
That's exactly, Wayne says that to me all the time. I'm not a stage magician, I'm a close up magician, but the flight time, even as a close up magician, is still the same. And he said, you can't buy that. This is not something you can go to a club and buy and say, right, I want to, like air miles, when you're learning to be a pilot, you can't go into a club and say, right, I want 20 hours of flight time.
Yeah, it's true.
You've got to earn it. And the way you earn it is by starting off by doing it to your friends and family, which, you know, goes against the grain because they'll always be appreciative of what you do. And that's probably where the problem starts. You know, they see you do a double lift and they're like, oh, wonderful, you're great. You know, and I think, who was it that said it? Danny Buckler. Yeah, people walk into, Danny Buckler said it on one of our coffee mornings. People walk into a theatre and rather than sit there and go, that's amazing, well done, you're brilliant, they look at them and go, oh, my Cheryl could do that.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then that's where it starts. You know, they go back. Oh, I just see Joe Longform do, you know, 2 hours in an arena. But you know, John can do that. John, my uncle, can do that. Why don't you go on Britain's Got Talent? And then that's it. It's gone. Poof. There's a huge difference, as Danny pointed out. If you haven't seen that coffee morning,
I'm going to talk about that in a sec. Yeah.
Oh right. Okay. And that's something that Danny said. You know, people in the UK, not so much in America, but people in the UK. They're not sitting there going, oh, that was a brilliant show. And I think it's exactly the same when a magician or a hobbyist magician, amateur magician, has been doing it for some time. And then they go on and they see these guys doing these social media things and their prank things, whatever. And they sit there and they go, I could do that. I could do that now. Whack on the phone and just do it. Whereas, you know, people like, I know Rick Lacks, his flight time is phenomenal. I mean, the guy's been working for years.
Mm. And that's the problem. You find that you've got magicians these days that are putting themselves forward for gigs that they're not ready for. I spent 4 years, I wasn't doing the clubs, but I did the holiday parks. Like I spent 4 or 5 years every night traveling across the country to a different holiday park.
It's good ground to work. It's good ground to earn your chops. That's what you need to do, is earn your chops. You don't hear that anymore. Oh, that guy, you know, Wayne earned his chops.
Yeah.
He didn't go on Britain's Got Talent to become the next, you know, magician. Yeah, he went to the working man's clubs. He had beer bottles thrown at him and he was sworn at and told to get off the stage, and you know.
But you can't skip the steps.
No.
If you go from here to here, Well, that's fine. That may work. But then when you're at that level, you haven't learned what you need to deal with it when you're at that level.
Yeah, and then you'll come crashing down. And that is the problem, I think, a lot of people. I genuinely think that this lockdown is a reboot for the entertainment industry. The entertainment industry is one of those industries where you can't just switch it off. You can't go, right, that's it. We're going to switch off all the shows off the West End. We're going to switch off all the TV shows and things like that. And I think, I genuinely think, and Wayne and I have been talking about this a lot, that this is like a reboot. Like you said earlier, people are now getting, people that were in the entertainment business are now getting jobs elsewhere.
Yeah.
And some of them out of necessity because they've got to pay the bills. But I also genuinely think that there's a lot of them that weren't really necessarily entertainers to start with.
Yeah.
And now they've got to go and get a proper job. So it's like a cleansing, for more of a better word. And like you said, Craig, I think people, when they come out of this lockdown, are going to be wanting live entertainment like there's no tomorrow. I just hope that, you know, it doesn't go back to the way it was. If it stays cleansed.
Yeah, eventually we'll get past it. What comes shall pass. So before we finish, I want to ask about one more thing, which is you guys have started doing a YouTube show, Coffee Morning, and you've had some phenomenal guests. I mean, you've had some amazing guests and David Penn. So, I mean, that's really cool. That's... no, I love Dave to bits. No, you've had some amazing guests. Can you tell me a little bit about the Coffee Mornings, where that came about?
I wanted to do it.
It's his idea.
But I wanted to make sure it was really short.
Yeah. Because they kept to about 20 or 30 minutes, aren't they?
No, less than that. 15 minutes.
Yeah.
15 to 20 minutes. I mean, the idea was to put it on Instagram. And Instagram have a set time of 15 minutes for a video. Since then, we've re-decided that it should be YouTube. So we are literally, we could go on forever for the video.
And
we
still kept it short. I wanted the guests not to be the usual suspects.
Yeah. A lot of the people, and I mean, obviously, you're so well-connected in the entertainment industry that you snap your fingers and anybody will come along and do, you know, you'll get anyone there, which is amazing. And like I say, some of the guests that you've had already, I'm a big watcher, I love it, you know, have been great. So where can people find, what's the YouTube URL?
And I'll put it- you could help us out here, Craig, because it is such a new channel. We don't have a custom URL. We need to get 100 subscribers.
Okay, right. So,
we are still trying to get 100. It's gradually going up, and we're getting more and more views each week, which is what is expected. But I've noticed with YouTube shows that they're very slow burners. You have to, maybe if we'd have started this a year ago, perhaps we would have been in a different position. But you know, we just started it now, and we will continue to do it because, like Wayne says, it's 15 minutes. You can watch it while you're sitting on the toilet. You can watch it, you know, while you're sitting on the bus. It takes up no time at all. We've had some phenomenal guests, Charlie Fry, Danny Buckler is a good friend of ours. We've got some phenomenal guests coming on. We've got, you would have seen it by now, the school reunion, as I like to call it, with Wayne's support act from his tour. Followed his TV series.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good one to get together.
That's right. That's absolutely fantastic.
So we like it. So yes. If you do like to talk, listen to about magic showbiz, Joe Pasquale. Who else? I can't remember. Duncan Trillo's been on with the support act. Who else? Bob Gill. We talked about.
Roy Down.
About Roy Johnson, Ken
Brock. Yeah.
There's a couple with us on our own just chewing the fat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been great. Well, I said Charlie Fry already. Oh. We've got some really good ones lined up coming up soon.
So do me a favour. If you're watching this on Magic TV, I'm going to put a description. I'm going to put a link right at the top of the description. Can you do me a favour and help Wayne and Mike get their
URL?
Go subscribe. And it is an amazing show. It's well worth watching. Yeah. And as they say, it's not very
long. It's only 15 minutes. Yeah. It's not long.
Go subscribe down below.
It's not like this show.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I just interviewed Mark Spellman, and that was 3.5 hours.
Wow.
How
is Mark? I haven't spoken to him for ages.
He's loving life. He's great. It's an amazing interview as well. He really breaks down step by step the whole process as to why he decided to go back with the whole X thing. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on the channel. Wayne, you're amazing. You're an inspiration. Thank you for everything that you do and continue to do in the magic community.
Thank you, Mike.
And Mike, you are one hell of a guy as well. You and I have gone back so many years.
Yeah, I remember sitting in the restaurant with Michael Pierce talking about your competition.
No, I'm about 21 then.
Did you wear men's clothing then?
No.
I don't think he ever has, Wayne.
No.
Oh, dear.
That was when I was a little girl. So anyway,
guys, thank you so much.
Right.
Leave a comment down below. Make sure that you follow Wayne and Mike on YouTube. Let's help them get their channel URL. And leave a comment. I know they'll read them. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel. And I'll be back tomorrow with another video. Thanks very much for watching. Wayne, Mike, you're both brilliant. I'll see you again. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel,
Magic TV,
which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.